Hello and welcome to Monocle 24's The Urbanist, the show all about the cities we live in. I'm Andrew Tuck. This week I'm opening my diary and some of the things I've also written here at Monocle to chart 1 year in one city for one person during the pandemic. February 15th, 2020. On the flight back from Geneva, the plane is full of epidemiologists and medical wonks returning from a meeting at the World Health Organization about coronavirus. I know this because they're all talking about it in rather excited tones.
I predict this will have a very long tail. It could last until November,
says one. None of them is wearing a mask, and there are lots of handshakes as they say goodbye. February 29. This week in London, I've been out to dinner, restaurant packed, been to the theatre and interviewed the team set to revitalise London's Grosvenor Square. Although I have noticed that the whiff of hand sanitizer is everywhere that I've been. And then, this morning, the first case was announced of COVID transmitted in the community in the UK, i.e. not someone returning to the UK. Despite trying to remain positive, you feel the growing unease.
Now in isolation and being treated by specialist NHS staff.
March 6, in Palma de Mallorca. Last night we went to a bar come restaurant and got talking to a couple from the UK who explained that, along with their holiday looks, they had packed rubber gloves and masks. I looked around. The bar was filled with locals, visitors and lovers, young and old, and life looked pretty normal. I imagined the couple sitting there in their medical gloves. Would people have thought that a pair of tipsy heart surgeons had nipped out mid-operation for a carver chaser? March 8.
Good evening. We start tonight with the unprecedented measures being enforced right across Italy to try to limit the spread of coronavirus.
In Italy, Lombardy, including Milan, is now in lockdown because of COVID outbreaks. March 9, all northern Italy is going into lockdown. March 10, all of Italy is in lockdown. March 12, the US has banned flights from Europe. The PM says that COVID can no longer be contained. March 14, London feels odd. Waiting for a storm? The number of confirmed cases of coronavirus infections in the UK remains in the hundreds, but the predictions are ugly. And behaviour is shifting. Public transport is being shunned. On the morning cycle to work, I feel as though I'm in a two-wheeled demonstration. At one point, I'm in a snaking trail of 100 cyclists. By afternoon, the city is quiet. Shops and galleries near Monocle have signs in their windows saying that they are closed until further notice.
From this evening, I must give the British people a very simple instruction.
March 16.
You must stay at home.
The country is told to work from home where possible, avoid social contact. I talk to the editorial team. People start packing up and leaving, taking even their huge screens with them. March 17. Europe's borders are now closed. March 18, all schools to shut indefinitely from Friday in the UK. Feels like most people have vanished from London streets anyway. A few determined drinkers in the pubs. March 20, the government has ordered all pubs, bars and restaurants to close. March 21, I've been driving this week, something I rarely do in the city. Even being on my bicycle doesn't quite feel right. You want to be cocooned. On Thursday, heading home late afternoon, I stopped the car at a crossing near the normally frantic Tottenham Court Road. Not to let a pedestrian cross, though. Instead, taking in this new world, this empty city, is a magnificent fox with a show-off tail. He looks me in the eye and slowly walks across the road. If he had a cap, he might have doffed it in my direction. I watch him vanish, and then I move on. Panic buying has also hit. On Wednesday, rumours circulated that London might be forced into deeper lockdown. What happens if I cannot leave the house at the weekend? To hell with loo rolls. I nip to Daunt Books and grab a tote of easy reads, and then I run to the Farrow and Ball paint shop and pay over the odds for litres of what is essentially white paint. Perhaps in these uncertain times, I will be able to do some decorating. I'm clearly not very good at planning for the end of the world. If I was Noah, I would probably forget to put the animals on the ark, but instead waste my time making sure it had nice curtains and some cosy cushions. March 23rd. Lockdown begins. Stay at home. Only leave to get food and exercise once a day. March 28th. The sun has been out all week and people are slowly claiming abandoned bits of public space. I drive into the office one day for Monocle 24 and on the normally busy pavement outside our offices, a dad has spread out a picnic blanket for his toddler to eat her lunch on. On Thursday at 8 p.m, as in many countries across Europe, people in the UK have been asked to come to their windows and clap to show appreciation for all that their healthcare workers are doing and enduring. We go up onto our roof terrace at the allotted time, and from every corner we hear a thunderous rumble. There's even someone blowing a trumpet. March 29th. Over 1,000 people have now died in the UK from coronavirus.
At today's government press conference, NHS England's medical director warned every one of us has a part to play if the UK is to keep the death toll under 20,000.
April the 2nd, another 500 deaths announced. April the 4th. It's reported that in our absence from Midori House, mice have been spotted on the editorial floor. Perhaps they're taking over and running a fledgling shadow title, Mousicle. I imagine one fashioning a little outfit from the clothes left by our fashion editor's desk so that it looks the part of a style writer. Another writing about how to furnish a mouse hole from our design editor's perch, and a mousy culture editor writing about the new rat pack. Maybe one is right now having a swivel in my chair. We call pest control.
Within the past few seconds, the Prime Minister has been under the care of doctors in a hospital in London, and he is being now admitted into intensive care with those persistent symptoms.
April the 7th. The PM is in intensive care with COVID.
Can you all go home, please? It's not a holiday.
April the 12th.
It's a lockdown.
Police were patrolling the park today, looking for people sitting on a bench or talking to people from outside their household. How fast life changes.
The green, go home.
April the 18th. This week, I found a calming antidote when I interviewed Jan Gehl, now 83 and the world's best-known urban designer. I called him at his home in Denmark, where he is social distancing with his wife, and as he picked up the phone, he was contentedly crunching his way through a carrot, a big one. It appears that he's both a sage and a Bugs Bunny impersonator. Perhaps a couple of the questions were tinged with my angst. Would the world be changed permanently? Would social distancing rules put an end to communal living, shared space? But his response was clear.
I'm quite sure that there will be very little effect at all,
he said.
Homo sapiens has this history of development. He is what he is, a socially oriented walking animal, and that we will overcome the adversaries. There will be a little scare for a couple of years, but then the Homo sapiens will put forward his head, and that will dominate what we do, where we live and how we live.
April the 25th. There are more people out on the streets, and the sounds from building sites are suddenly a larger part of the spring chorus. A local cafe has also reopened for takeaways. Having a coffee made for you is a rare reminder of the old days. The weather has been flawless, so I've been able to work a part of every day on our minuscule yet bushy roof terrace. And this is the bit that I do want to remember. There's a stillness probably never seen before in modern London. It would be idyllic if the cause wasn't so painful. May the 2nd. In a bid to keep people from touching things, all public conveniences have been closed. The taps in the park where you could wash your hands or quench your dog's thirst turned off. And so this week, the leash terrier and I have caught sight of more than one person squatting low in the grass, eyes swivelling this way and that with lizard-like alacrity. And I assure you, they are not on military training. May the 4th. Deaths lower, 200 today. May 9th. There are lots of people talking about how they're hearing sounds that they've never really tuned into before. But it's more the sounds that you don't hear that will define this time for me. Key among these, wheelie suitcases being dragged down residential streets by Airbnb guests. May the 16th. On my phone, I have an app called Nextdoor. It's available in lots of countries and offers a community notice board just for your specific neighbourhood. It's not anonymous, so people tend to be polite, helpful, and generous of spirit. And over recent weeks, I've been able to see a community pulling together with thoughtful offers of assistance. Even the biggest alerts are never that terrifying. Maybe a shady-looking character has been spotted stealing pot plants. This week, the most commented-on post ran,
"Help! I tried to bleach my roots tonight and my hair has turned completely orange. Are there any hairdressers out there? Tell me what to do."
May 17th. Jealous of the dog who got a haircut today. PM says in an interview that he wants the country back and functioning by July, but the deaths continue to rattle you. May 23rd. London has worked pretty well in recent weeks. Far from perfect, but it's got through with its corner shops and bakers, good spirit and all those nice parks. And I see no need to abandon our great cities now. Let the deserters be gone. May 25th.
Dominic Cummings had another opportunity to check his eyesight this morning as he looked for the car that was taking him to Downing Street.
Paper's having a field day with the story of Dominic Cummings, the PM's advisor, who has been spotted driving around the countryside, not supposedly allowed under lockdown rules, and he says it was to test his eyesight after suffering from COVID. Even the right-wing press are red-faced with disbelief. The 1st of June. More restrictions are being eased. You can now meet in groups of six, if outdoors. June the 6th. Our neighbours press our doorbell. It's late, but the sky is still a polished steel blue. If we look towards the moon, in 3 minutes' time, they tell us, we might see the International Space Station pass by with its newly bolstered crew that now numbers five. Anatoly Ivanishin, Ivan Wagner, Chris Cassidy, Bob Behnken and Doug Hurley. And here it comes. Speeding dot made pearl white by the light of the moon. So small with the naked eye, yet captivating. We stand watching until it vanishes. June 13th. I was sceptical that London would prove to be nimble and generous when it came to fresh ideas about getting its incredible restaurant scene not only back in business, but making a profit. However, there are lots of signs that the city could be on the cusp of doing some great things. Landlords and restaurateurs in Soho, for example, are campaigning hard for the neighbourhood to be temporarily pedestrianised this summer to allow restaurants to head outdoors with their tables and chairs. It's a sort of spontaneous urbanism that makes people love their city afresh. June 15th, 30 deaths. Shops reopened today.
Mr. Speaker, I can tell the House...
June 23rd.
...that we will also reopen restaurants and pubs.
Hallelujah!
The PM announces that from July the 4th, pubs, hotels and museums can reopen. A pint or Picasso's, you choose. July the 4th. Property search companies are reporting that inner-city dwellers are frantically looking for homes in the suburbs, shaken by their garden-free lockdowns. Pundits are predicting that we will see an exodus of the young and the talented, that inner cities will lose their appeal as people avoid public transport, refuse to return to their office towers, and in turn ensure the demise of numerous stores and restaurants that lured them there in the first place. The trouble is that cities are at their humming, spinning, gyrating peaks when theatres are open, cinemas packed, clubs jumping and bars rammed. They need a sense of possibility to be on the breeze. While all of these lures slumber, cities will be challenged. July 5th, first meal in a restaurant since lockdown. Staff in plastic visors and rubber gloves, QR code to get the menu, and we had to clear our plates into a secure tray. Loved it. July the 6th. 15 deaths. July the 11th. As the restrictions ease in London, people need to do an audit of their lives and decide which parts from the lockdown months they want to hold on to. For me, the most important is how people on my street looked out for one another and got to know each other. Central to this sense of pulling together has been my octogenarian neighbour. And this is not because he needs everyone's help. He sometimes lets you get groceries for him, but prefers to take a stroll to the shops himself. Nor is it because he needs company. He has a rich and varied social set. It's just that as the street came together, he found himself at the heart of the action, including a lot of street drinks. And I have definitely seen more of him than any of my usual circle of friends. Every evening, we meet up at the end of the day to water the plants in front of our houses. He takes control of the hose and has worked the whole thing into a routine where he pretends to be my gardener, and if a passerby stops to say hello, he tells them that he's not allowed to talk on the job or that his salary will be docked. July 20th. Get chatting to a professor at Zurich Airport who is working on the Oxford vaccine. He says that it will work and that it could be out this year. July 24th. Masks now obligatory in shops. July 29th, growing talk of a second wave. Numbers climbing in Spain and in Germany. August the 8th, it's like trading futures. Everyone around me seems to have taken bets on summer holidays with little idea of whether they will actually happen. I lost Spain to new quarantine rules just a couple of weeks ago and now have to see if Greece works out in 2 weeks' time. To even think about it seems to jinx it. August 15th. Every week in the UK brings news of another international bank, investment firm or city institution announcing that it will never require staff to come into work ever again, or if they do, will force them to go into quarantine for 2 weeks if they dare to travel with ordinary people on public transport. The financial world is doing a very good job of implying that the pandemic is nothing to do with them and that, if you don't mind, they'll wait this one out. Meanwhile, there are other businesses making headlines too. The ones that are laying off staff as retail crumbles and restaurant groups stutter. These two stories are not unconnected. The chief execs running for the hills are turning their backs on myriad businesses, small and large, that in the past have taken care of their glass tower employees via their shoe repair shops, florists, cafes, car washes, hairdressers, cocktail bars, and much more. August the 29th. Last Tuesday afternoon, I was drinking a beer and eating just out of the oven pizza in the company of Andrea Rasca. He's the founder of Mercato Metropolitano, which runs community food markets in London. Rasca sees the markets as a way of helping existing communities, doing good by the environment, and also making places that are simply great fun in which to eat. He has kept his numbers up and his staff and stallholders going because he says, what's the alternative? It's easy to stay at home if you're rich, but how can you stay at home and not think about things like this? September the 2nd, Donald Trump and Melania have COVID.
Tested positive for the coronavirus. It is extraordinary.
September the 5th, we made it to Greece, to the island of Folegandros. Like everywhere in the world, the inhabitants are dealing with coronavirus and are taking it seriously. From waiter to boat skipper, masks are worn without exception. But the diminished number of visitors means that many hotels are closed, others are just ticking over, and this summer will surely be tough on many of the people who live here and make their income from visitors. But for now, at this very moment, looking down to the bay from the hotel as a ferry comes into the port, Folegandros looks pretty good. September the 29th. Germany is a neutral nation, a place where Swiss and UK residents can meet without going into quarantine afterwards. So this week we chose Munich to host a gathering of staff from Monocle's London and Zurich HQs. And what a backdrop. At Schumann's bar on Odeonplatz, we established a sort of al fresco boardroom and here, over 2 days, ran through every project, ambition and potential wrinkle on the horizon. The sun shone throughout, but it was that strange, glorious and slightly melancholic time of year when you sense the season shifting at pace. The rich light looks like a fading flame, the afternoon shadows stretch extravagantly, and as you read financial updates and look at office redesign blueprints, A scurry of autumn-ready leaves falls from the trees. Is this the beginning or the end of it? October the 3rd. To get through the evenings, there's been a film every night, and for the past few days, we've been having a Hitchcock festival at our home. Rear Window is so far in the top spot. It's a movie for the times. James Stewart stuck in his apartment with his broken leg, observing the lives unfolding through neighbours' rear windows. And although there's a murder, it's the passing frames of love lives, loneliness and creativity that make up most of the film. I'm sure that there could be a good coronavirus lockdown remake, except that this time you wouldn't be allowed to leave the house to investigate the murder unless you were also buying essential food, and most of the snatch scenes would be of bread being baked, people struggling with their Wi-Fi router, and perhaps someone watching yet another Hitchcock movie. October the 17th. Hold on tight. We're going down the slide again. It feels as though most of Europe's metropolises are reeling from rising numbers of coronavirus infections, and that means new measures, curfews, tighter quarantines, everyone tucked up in bed early. In London, we can no longer have people from other households in our homes or meet them inside a pub or restaurant. You can sit outside in the rain, however. The new rules kicked in on Friday at midnight, although seeing as it was already illegal for a pub or restaurant to be open that late, I'm not sure where they set the comedy cut-off time. So, on Thursday, aware of what was about to vanish, I did something I rarely do. When I got home from work, I went straight to the pub with my neighbours. The Duke is an architectural sore thumb. Designed in 1937 and completed the following year, it's slotted in behind houses that were erected in the early 1800s. On Thursday, four of us took up residence in one of the high-backed wood panel booths, ate crisps and drank. There were perhaps another 20 people in the pub, all with friends, all safely in booths, all being served at their tables. There's no clever way out of this mess, but I hope that the Duke makes it through what lies ahead. October the 28th. The news headlines today: police will break up Christmas dinners that ignore the rule of six. October the 29th, infection rates rising fast in London. November the 14th, I have welcomed back running's sweaty embrace. In truth, I only ran into its arms because my neighbour was about to start training for a half marathon and seemed happy to have someone older and less fit to accompany him for the early stages. Running, I am told, is spiritual, a time to think, an activity that leaves you feeling connected to nature, to the city. Maybe. After 1 week, I see it as being more about surprising chafing and a fear of inclines. Okay, there are some good things. For starters, our route takes us down to the Thames, where we cross the Millennium Footbridge, from where that storied view downriver towards Tower Bridge catches me every time. When London is shuttered, when the damp and dark have settled in, the city can feel small, oppressive even. But as you cross the river on foot, you see that vista and you know why this is your home.
Time to take action because there is no alternative. And from
November the 1st, England back into full lockdown from Thursday midnight for 4 weeks.
CBS News projects
November the 5th. US election still not called, but it looks like Trump will be leaving the White House.
Pfizer executives are calling it
November the 9th. Pfizer has announced that its vaccine is 90% effective against coronavirus. There could be 10 million doses available in the UK by Christmas. November the 28th. Habitat in Tottenham Court Road opened its doors to customers in 1966. But this week, the current owners of the brand, the supermarket group Sainsbury's, announced that it will close the shop in the coming months. The press release had all the usual talk of challenging times, changing demand, and so on. Sir Terence Conran, Habitat's founder, who died in September, understood the desires and hopes that go into making a home, and there's a need for new retail visionaries on our high streets. People who love brands, people who know that a shop can be a beacon, a lesson in how to live your life in a better way. December the 2nd. The Pfizer vaccine has UK approval. December the 12th. When you're in the midst of a crisis, it's hard to tell what's changed forever and what will fall away again. But we shouldn't think about office life in isolation, because what will willingly lure people back into their companies is not the 9-to-5 routine nor squeezing onto a packed train. The things that have always pulled people into the embrace of the city are what happens at the end of the day or at lunchtime, or what they see through the window. It's the city's promise of the new, of places, experiences and moments that cannot be found with ease beyond its borders. A day at the office becomes attractive when it segues into drinks, an exhibition, a play, dinner with the gang.
On the latest data that shows the virus.
December the 19th. London is in Tier 4 restrictions. Non-essential shops are now closed. No mixing of households again. December the 29th. Over 50,000 new COVID cases in the UK. The health secretary says we will be free of this by spring. Let's see. January the 1st, New Year's Day, 2021. Over 1 million people have now been vaccinated in the UK. January the 4th, the PM announces that the UK is going back into another national lockdown. January the 6th, over 60,000 COVID cases are announced. January the 9th, the dismantling of neighbourhoods continues at a pace and it hits you. If you stand still and just look, you can see it all over London. On Monday, our neighbours got into their car and left the street for the last time, a new chapter to be started in rural Devon. Her job as a hairdresser had vanished again, and his company had become wedded to staff working from home. So why would they stay paying city rents? The landlord of a nearby pub, meanwhile, is very busy, selling off his beer glasses and furniture. He's handed back the lease. Yet, even now, I'm confident that the city's power endures below the surface. If every club, bar and theatre could open tomorrow, this place would go nuts. January the 23rd. I wouldn't put on my running kit without London as a running partner. I head down dark streets in the city of London, where the only life you see is security guards in vast lobbies and the homeless. I glimpse worshippers in a Catholic church in Mayfair, two men smoking cigarettes as one caresses a string of prayer beads outside an embassy. The riverside paths are busier, with more runners, lovers perched on walls and dog walkers. But even here, with every bar, restaurant and theatre closed, the quietness jars. So while it's great to feel such ownership of the stalled city as you run, and although you are still able to make out its stern, solid beauty as drizzle mists the blackness, London should not look like a set waiting for the actors to take their places and for the action to begin again. More than 10 million people. February the 3rd. Over 10 million people have now been vaccinated in the UK, but there is growing concern about new variants. February the 10th. The UK is going to introduce hotel quarantines for countries on a red list in a bid to control variants in Brazil and South Africa. Bolt, stable door. But infections are falling, and now 29,000 people are in hospital with COVID, down from a second wave peak of 40,000. February the 11th. Headlines, all holidays off this summer. These stories whip up like tempestuous squalls. And then in a few weeks' time, you look back, the dust has settled, and the truth often looks very different. But they are daily and they are sapping. February the 14th. The UK government's target hit. 15 million people have now been vaccinated. March the 1st. There are now 15,000 people in hospital. Some cases of the Brazilian variant have been found in the UK, but it's another story where the panic has already begun to subside. March the 7th, 10,898 people in hospital with COVID. March the 8th, a letter in the post. It's an invitation, one I'm going to happily accept. Tomorrow, less than a year since London went into lockdown, I will have my first vaccination jab. And today, England takes the first step out of lockdown with all schools reopening. Will all go well? Will numbers tick up again? Or can we finally hope that we're about to return to the life we once had? Well, all the best bits. March 16th. Italy announces that it will ban all Easter celebrations, and regions, including those around Rome and Milan, are to head back into lockdown. A year on, history repeating as the Kent variant triggers a third wave. In the UK, there are now 8,029 people in hospital with COVID, and over 36% of people have had an initial vaccination. As always with COVID, you have to stay calm, be patient. This will pass, but not as fast as we hope for. But one day soon, I hope that my diary stops looking like a medical journal. Well, I hope you've kind of enjoyed my version of Dear Diary. Just a small footnote, I realise that this is one person's story among many millions, and I've been very fortunate. You know, I haven't had friends who have died from this, and while I have many friends who work in the health service and have been on the front line, I haven't wanted to tell their stories here. I've told my story, one story in one city. So I realise there are many other people who have very different vantage points on this. But thank you for listening, and I hope it brought some smiles as well as some reminders of the year that we've all been through. Today's episode was produced, of course, by Carlotta Rabello and David Stevens, and David also edited the show. Thank you for listening, City Lovers.